Doctor, that means there's trouble brewing somewhere.
Catapults the propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to December the 10th. We're Sunday evening here in our bunker.
It has turned beautiful here in mid-Missouri. It was a little cloudy today, but we were in the mid-50s today. A week ago, we were still trying to figure out how to get our cars out of the parking lot.
We were barely above 10.
Now we're in the mid-50s, and we're going to be in the 50s all week here in Missouri. So it's going to be a very slushy week here as that 18 inches of snow melts away.
I will take slush any day.
Yeah.
You know, we are at the bottom of a big old hill in our apartment complex. And at the top of the hill, it's been really nice bare pavement for dry pavement for several days now. Mm-hmm. Halfway down the hill and at the bottom of the hill, it's like an ice rink.
Yeah, because it had been chilly enough last week, even though that it was above freezing during the day. It would freeze over during the night. Now it's...
Run down the hill.
Yeah, run down the hill. And then so getting up that hill was always the challenge. This week we shouldn't have that problem anymore. Doesn't look like we're going to get below freezing for at least the next 7 days. So.
Well, I know. Every time I'd drive up the hill and I'd see someone coming down the hill at me, I'd just pray.
Yeah.
Please don't let them hit me. Please don't let me hit them.
So that's what's happening here in mid-Missouri weather-wise. You know, as pleasant as it would be to be in 75-degree weather year-round, watching the bugs we were watching the Mummy movie tonight, and just, you know, thinking about bugs like that, that they have to deal with down in, you know, Florida, where they've got 2-inch-long cockroaches that fly, I'll take freezing and cold, you know, for a few months a year just to avoid the insects.
You know, I think I would, but I suspect that if we were in that glorious weather, my sister lives down there now, and you can't get her to leave.
Yeah.
She hates bugs, too, but she loves it down there.
Even after their house got hit by those 3 hurricanes summer before last. I couldn't figure that out. Well, we got an exciting announcement. We have been added to the lineup of a new internet talk station, iChristTalk.com.
So there are 5 ways to listen to us now.
That's right. You can listen on your computer. You can download us to an iPod or other MP3 player. You can listen periodically through the week as Remnant Radio replays archived shows. And then, of course, there's Global Public Radio, which airs the show, I think, 5 times every Monday.
Are they mad?
Interesting. Well, we're in amongst some really good shows on both iChrist Talk and Remnant Radio. And, well, I say both on all of those.
Oh, networks, we are.
Public Radio.
It's amazing that we're on any of those.
So anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes and you can check that out.
Can you name 5?
What's the other one?
Aren't we on 4? Affiliates?
Global Public Radio, Remnant Radio, iChrist Talk, and we're talking with Rick Wiles.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We're not quite on the 4th yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick Wiles of True News, who we interviewed last summer for our prophecy series, is putting together a network of talk-oriented programs, and then you'll be able to hear PID Radio.
Yeah,
as
he
part
contacted
of that as
well. Us about being part of his lineup. We don't have any official confirmation yet, but we'll let you know as soon as we do. We also have some other plans in mind that you and I talked about today.
Yeah, we miss doing the daily program, and so we're looking at a way that we can do the daily program and still keep it, you know, manageable from a time standpoint, both from ours and from yours, because so hour a day is a lot to expect you to devote to listening to us blather.
It is. So here's what we're going to do. If you'll send us your telephone numbers.
We'll call you with updates. No.
We have to go down the list, so it might be 3 in the morning when we finally reach your name on the list. But no, there's an easier way to do that yet, isn't there?
Yeah, we're going to do the daily program in a half-hour format. So we'll do a weekday program, Monday through Friday, in a half-hour format. And then the hour-long show on Sunday, which will then also go to the other networks that are plugging in 1 hour and filling 1 hour slots. Mm-hmm. So
that helps them out. It gives us Saturday off and also Saturday for conducting interviews.
Right.
And speaking of conducting interviews, we are going to be posting our first hour-length interview on Sunday with Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin. So if you've read Expendable Elite, you know exactly who we're talking about, or if you've read some of his articles at Watcher.com.
That'll be a great hour because we'll be able to delve more deeply into issues of faith and why he is compelled and has the courage to speak out about things that the U.S. government would rather not have disclosed. For example, that his orders as a captain in the Green Berets was to essentially set up the first post from which the U.S. would launch attacks into Cambodia during the Vietnam War, when Cambodia was officially a neutral country, and while the United States government was denying that we were going to ever attack Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, those were his direct orders. And there's more than that. Orders to assassinate a foreign head of state and other things, but we'll get into that when we talk to Lieutenant
Colonel Marvin. He has some amazing things to talk about. He's a born-again Christian now, so he comes at this from that sort of perspective. But I think it's relevant today because it shows that our government was involved in things even back then that the American public wasn't privy to. There are things going now that we don't know about. Now, I understand that for security reasons, we're not supposed to know everything. That's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're going behind Congress's back, when you're going behind the backs of even some of our diplomats and messing around where you don't belong, and messing everything up.
Right.
I just think that's wrong. So we'll look forward to talking with him. We're going to chat with him. It'll be posted on next Sunday's show, a week from today. And I said Watcher.com a minute ago. Sorry, I meant WatcherMagazine.com.
Yeah. And that's been a real blessing, too, because he shares through those pieces some of the things that make him what he is and what shaped his character. Look forward to next week's interview. It's going to be a great, great show. And speaking of things that the government has been involved in behind the scenes, a report in the UK, the Guardian out of the UK today, reports that the U.S. government was involved in secret back-channel negotiations with the leaders of the Iraq insurgency, the Sunnis, at the beginning of the year, like last January, February, March of 2006. They were meeting regularly with Zelma Khalilzad, who is apparently now going to replace John Bolton at the UN.
Hmm? Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, he's an old buddy, apparently, of the Bush family, and he's been involved in this whole process to get us into Afghanistan and Iraq for a very long time. It's the Sunday Times in the UK, not the Guardian. But these talks, which included the former Prime Minister Alawi, who is a member of the Ba'ath Party, broke down because they were concerned that the U.S. was making too many overtures to include Syria and Iran in the dealings. Mm. In other words, the Sunnis, who comprise 20% of the population in Iraq, don't want the Shiites to gain power because the Shiites and the Kurds, in other words, 80% of Iraq, really suffered under Saddam, who was a Sunni. Mm. And they're just itching to...
Payback.
Itching for payback, right. So these meetings began in Baghdad with Zelma Khalilzad and former Prime Minister Alawi on January 17th, and they finally broke down several months ago. There was a supposed to be like a 10-day grace period where both the U.S. military would pull back and the insurgents would quit blowing stuff up. And when they got together to meet, both sides accused the other of breaking the truce, and so, you know, just kind of went out the window. So it really kind of leads us to question what is going to happen next. I mean, nobody seems really happy with the recommendations of the Iraq study group. The U.S. government's not happy. The Kurds aren't happy, for sure. The Sunnis aren't happy. The only ones happy about it seem to be Iran and Syria.
That was a dog and pony show. You and I have been saying this for a while, that if you look at the membership of that study group, except for maybe James Baker, it appeared to be people who had name recognition, but really didn't have a whole lot of experience with the Middle Eastern war.
Right. There was a former Secretary of Defense, Perry, who was in the group. And there were some career politicians that were in the group. But, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor?
I just, for the life of me, I don't get it. I'll be honest, when I've seen the pictures, you know, what few pictures there are of that those meetings, she looked either bored or sleepy.
It was almost as though they put her in there because somebody said, "Hey, we need a woman."
Yeah.
And Vernon Jordan, we need an African American.
Mm-hmm.
Vernon Jordan's a smart guy. There's no question about it. But he's essentially an attorney and an investment banker. He works for Lazard Frères.
Yeah, he pleases people on the left. Sorry, pointing the wrong way, because he's an old Clinton crony.
Exactly, and a regular Bilderberg guy.
Oh yeah. Let's not forget Vernon Jordan is the one who got Monica Lewinsky her new job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a fixer.
Uh-huh, exactly what he was, and he still is.
Yeah, So a lot of people with name recognition, people who apparently could command some respect because of their experience in the political wars, but how many of them really knew anything about mm-hmm. the political situation on the ground in Iraq? I dare say they knew less about what's going on there than the average Marine who is serving on the streets of Haditha.
Did you see today's story about Donald Rumsfeld making a surprise visit to Iraq?
No.
Oh, yeah. I didn't post it to Watcher magazine, or I haven't yet. I may yet. But apparently today he just showed up there unannounced to say goodbye.
He's trying to secure his legacy, apparently.
I think he is. I don't think you should count him out. I suspect that he, okay, I'll fall on the knife. I'll go aside. I will dwindle so that things can continue. But at the same time, I know I'm going to keep my cut of the action, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you know, he made, what, $5 million on his stock in Gilead because mm-hmm. of the demand for Tamiflu over the last couple of years. He's still tied in with the movers and the shakers.
Sure he is.
So he's not going to be hurting. You're right. He's taken one for the team.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, though, that the political pundits who watch inside the Beltway seem to believe that the neocons have been rousted from the levers of power in Washington, that the only one who's still hanging on is Cheney, and that he's been marginalized because all of his allies now are gone. Not just Rumsfeld, who is the most visible probably, but also guys like Stephen Cambone, Elliot Abrams, who's kind of reversed course in what he believes we should do now, and other guys, Paul Wolfowitz, who was sort of, you know, promoted out of power to mm-hmm. the World Bank, John Bolton, who was now out as the ambassador at the UN.
Mm-hmm.
So Cheney is really the only neocon who's still hanging on there in that inner circle of power. But I don't know. I anyone who thinks that the power, the orders are really issued from the Oval Office, I think really doesn't grasp the true nature of the way things are done.
And I think a perfect example of the fact that the Oval Office is not the true origin of these orders goes to the Obama campaign, because this man has no international experience or very, very little. I know he's done a bit of traveling lately, so he's trying to look like he's important, or someone's trying to make him look important. I just, if he gets elected, I'm convinced it's only because he's to be the charismatic figurehead.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill
Clinton. And he may be a very intelligent man. It isn't that.
Well, he clearly is. I mean, he graduated magna cum laude from Harvard and was president of the Harvard Law Review. Oxford.
Oxford.
So did Bill Clinton.
I know. Hmm. Now, he was not, that I can find, a Rhodes Scholar, but he did go to Oxford.
Yeah. He is a very smart guy, but let's face it, he's got less than 2 years experience in the United States Senate, and being smart doesn't necessarily make you a good facilitator, somebody mm-hmm. who can really get things done.
Exactly.
But if, and this is something that Dan Marvin said while we were talking last week, since Kennedy, he doesn't think there's anyone who sat in that Oval Office who really called the shots.
I agree with that.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And Kennedy apparently tried, which is why his life was cut short.
I think Johnson wanted to. And I think in some ways Johnson appeared to, you know, because if you listen to those tapes,
mm-hmm.
he clearly was telling people what to do.
Yeah, but did what the oil guys in Texas wanted done, and what the company CIA wanted done
exactly
by stepping up the war in Vietnam.
Exactly. And that Richard brings Nixon, us to a new movie that's out.
Oh, okay.
That we need to see, that one on the CIA.
Yeah, the one that stars, was it?
Called The Good Shepherd with Matt Damon and
De Niro directs
Robert De Niro.
And it looks like a very interesting cast in there. Joe Pesci apparently has a cameo.
Mm-hmm.
And
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. So it does look very interesting. It will be interesting to compare that movie, The Good Shepherd, with the way intelligence ops are described in a number of books that we've read recently, like was The Last Circle, Sherry
mm-hmm,
Seymour,
mm-hmm.
Peter Lavenda's books. Mm-hmm. And we need to get the third of his trilogy, by the way.
Oh, we do.
And,
Dear Peter.
He's published by the same guy who publishes Dan Marvin. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So that'll be interesting to see. But getting back to Iraq, it is just such a tangle there, because not only do you have the Sunnis upset at the recommendations that we include Iran and Syria in the dialogue. You've got the reports this past week that private citizens in Saudi Arabia are funneling money into Iraq to finance the Sunni insurgency, while at the same time you've got Hezbollah supplying arms and training to the Shiite militias. What does that sound like, a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran?
I think that's what's been going on for a while.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that it's going to be very, very difficult for us to try to accomplish anything there, mm-hmm. as long as you've got those powers that are struggling for control.
Mm-hmm. Then we have what amounts to a coup taking place in Lebanon.
Yeah. And again, that's another area which the Saudis have traditionally exercised control. Mm-hmm. They were essentially the financial backers of the, not the Jamal family, but the...
Hariri
family. Right. Thank you. While Hezbollah and Amal are being financed by Iran. So you've got that's tug of war there. And then, of course, you've got the Christian Falange group in Lebanon, too, struggling for control. Mm-hmm. It is really a tangled web. And I think that we Americans suffer from a couple of real obstacles that are difficult to overcome. First of all, we don't understand well the tribal nature of most of those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, because we're such a secular society, we don't understand the importance of the religious aspects of the conflicts over there. And thirdly, I think it is we operate on this 4-year cycle. Everything politically is geared toward the next presidential mm-hmm. election.
We barely operate on a 4-year cycle. I would say we operate on a 1 to 2 year cycle. Almost immediately after any given election, mm-hmm. they're talking about the next election.
Right, right. Because, and especially when you've got the Congress so closely divided,
mm-hmm.
the next election, yes, it will be important because it's a presidential election. But if the Republicans or the Democrats, if it stays as close as it is now, you can bet that the next midterm election in 2010 will be a big deal. And a lot of our policies will be geared toward one side or the other, mm-hmm. winning the control of Congress again. So the sides that are playing for keeps in the Middle East aren't bound by those, by that short political cycle. They're also, they also have much longer memories than we do. Laura Mansfield made a great point that Al-Qaeda and the radical Islamists are still mad about the Crusades. And here in the U.S., we barely remember 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say that, but if you listen to Derek's show online, you can listen to Laura Mansfield. He talks with her almost every Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
They are well worth your time to download. And her chats with him only last 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, it's not like a huge file to download and listen to. And she has amazing insights. Another person who does, Doug Hagman.
Yeah.
Has been following this Litvinenko story, and he's following a thread of it that I think is a thread that could be a threat. And it has to do with that polonium-210 being used as a trigger.
Right. Hagman, and this was relates to an article originally written by Dr. Paul Williams and published in the Canada Free Press, which is something that Doug Hagman contributes to very, mm-hmm. Very frequently. Williams points out that polonium-210 and bismuth-209 are combined to form a trigger for a suitcase nuke.
Is it bismuth?
I believe that is correct. Let me check this again. No, you're right. Beryllium-9. The triggers beryllium-9 and polonium-210, and you'd have these two packets that are about the size of sugar packets,
mm-hmm.
and when they're crushed together, what happens basically is it triggers the mm-hmm. Action.
Triggers a reaction.
Right.
If you are a hunter or you've ever bought any of those packets that produce heat, it's because there are two chemicals, two or more, and when you crush them, they combine and they produce all this heat,
mm-hmm.
and it allows your hands to stay warm and things like that. This produces a whole lot. Enough of a reaction to kickstart a suitcase nuke.
Right. So the theory that is being developed here by Williams and which Doug Hagman agrees with is that it's possible that Litvinenko, who is known to have worked with Muslim rebels in Chechnya and who apparently, according to reports, converted to Islam and wanted to be buried as a Muslim, was working, may have obtained a suitcase nuke or was developing triggers for suitcase nukes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a story in today's Watcher magazine that comes out of Germany. Hmm. And it's about one of the three ex-KGB spies who met with Litvinenko on the day he was, you know, theoretically poisoned. He's got a trail leading from Russia through Germany to the UK.
Hmm, okay.
A radioactive trail.
Oh, interesting. So maybe he was delivering material to Litvinenko that was somehow leaking?
It could be. His name is Dmitry Kovtun.
Right. He's in. He's the one who's in a coma now.
Yes.
Huh. The people who, what I've read, and I can't say that I know people who are intimately familiar with the intelligence business, but just from a common sense standpoint, it would seem to us that if Vladimir Putin and the FSB wanted Litvinenko silenced, they would do it in a way that was a lot harder to trace and a lot faster mm-hmm. than polonium-210.
Do it quiet, do it quickly,
yeah.
and let him talk.
Exactly. Untraceable.
Mm-hmm.
The people who needed to get the message of Litvinenko's death would get the message, others in the spy trade,
mm-hmm.
Without raising the attention of a lot of people in the media. And we're just curious as to why this story has such legs.
I would love to. I've been doing the research. I still haven't figured it out. At first, I was very, very dubious about this whole connection to a suitcase nuke.
Mm-hmm.
The more I read about it, the more I'm wondering if maybe that isn't a genuine lead. If mm-hmm. it is not a genuine lead, boy, are they spinning this story.
Yep.
I have read today that there are people in Russia who are threatening to sue Kommersant and any Western media that are running accusations against Putin.
That's really interesting, because while the Western media has been sort of hinting that this might be the work of the Russian intelligence agencies, the media in Russia has been spinning this as a hit by the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And
the CIA and Mossad,
yeah,
depending on who you ask.
What's interesting, though, is that Kommersant in Russia has been running stories about this and painting Putin in a bad light.
Kommersant is owned by Boris Berezovsky.
Mm-hmm.
Who met with Litvinenko that same day, and he's a big, he practically was his sugar daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't mean that in a sexual way. I mean, he just provided money for him constantly, and you have to wonder, why would he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Unless maybe Berezovsky is, if indeed there is a terrorist cell at work,
mm-hmm.
then what is Berezovsky's connection? And you also have this connection to Mario Scaramella mm-hmm. out of Italy, who is a nuclear expert, so to speak. He also teaches, I don't know, software or something. But anyway, he is supposedly a professor, which I think he really is. But more than that, he advises governments on finding nuclear traffic and trails. And so that is all seeming to kind of come together in the possibility that this really could be that they have uncovered a plan to do a suitcase nuke mm-hmm. somewhere, maybe even in Great Britain or over here. I don't know.
Yeah. On the other hand, the possibility is very real that this is just all spin from one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
This is a battle being waged in the media to try to make one side mm-hmm. or the other look bad.
And this is the very frightening thing. If it's real,
mm-hmm.
then it's possible that it will happen here. If it's spin, it's possible that the spin is intended to cover up in advance something that will happen here. We keep having stories coming out of WorldNet Daily and other such, mm-hmm. you know, media sources that there is an American Hiroshima event mm-hmm. planned.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know if that's spin or if it's true. Either way, I think we may be in danger.
It's as we've said many times, one of the important things to take away from any news story is not so much whether the story is true or not, but it's what the media and those behind the media want mm-hmm. us to think. So that is one that we're keeping an eye on, because, you know, it's not like Litvinenko was anyone that we'd ever heard of before he was poisoned. And now it's a story that just continues in the news day after day.
It grows longer and longer legs. Well, speaking of things overseas and funerals, because Litvinenko's funeral was just conducted, there was a funeral in Chile for former dictator Pinochet, Augusto Pinochet.
Yep, he is.
I think Peter Lavenda would find that interesting.
Yes. Yeah, based on his experiences down there at Colonia Dignidad in Chile. Yeah, that is very interesting. What else have we got going on here? There were a couple of things here that we need to spend some time on. This strange stories here in the Midwest.
You know, there are some really, really odd things going on in here in the Midwest. And if you live anywhere in the Midwestern states, and I'm rather generous in the way I call that, I grew up thinking of the Midwest as Indiana, mm-hmm. Michigan, Illinois, Ohio.
Sure. Kentucky.
And stopping at the Mississippi River.
Oh, okay.
And anything beyond that was considered part of the Plains states. No, I now know that Missourians consider themselves in the Midwest. I've even heard Nebraska mentioned as Midwestern. I used to live in Nebraska, and we called ourselves part of the Plains States. But there you go. Well, anyway, there have been a couple of stories coming out of the Midwest that are really kind of, they're a little startling. And they may well impact on your family.
It's really odd, and the stories are strange enough that they almost sound like plots for horror movies or detective thrillers.
They do.
We'll start with one that's here in Missouri, down in the boot heel of Missouri, very close to the New Madrid Fault, the town of New Madrid, about 60 miles south of Cape Girardeau, a little town called Caruthersville. There are a group of young men, either finishing or just finished with high school, who have committed suicide, four of them in 5 months in the county. The county down there is Pemiscot, Pemiscot. And another teenage boy has attempted suicide but failed. What is odd is that all of the boys born in 1988, they all knew one another. Two of them had recently graduated from high school, and one of them served as the pallbearer at another's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
The last three deaths were all very similar. They were done by hanging in a closet at home. The boys had taken
a belt wrapped
it around their neck and hung it from a clothing bar, and then they squatted until they died.
They were taller than the bar, so they had to just drop the weight of their bodies. They could have stood up at any time.
Yes, and they were, one of the first things you think of is, this is one of those choking game things that you hear about.
I know, but when you have three in a row that all die from that just seems so unlikely. Surely one of them would think, well, I'm not going to try that.
No.
And since they knew each other.
Exactly.
And they were all born in the same year.
Yeah, so it is really bizarre in that little area down there near Caruthersville, Missouri. They all seemed to have, prospects. None of them gave indication that they were despondent enough to consider suicide.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, in fact, had done well enough on his high school baseball team that the week after he died, a small college called to inquire about recruiting the young man to play college baseball.
Mm.
And so we've got that going on down in southern Missouri, down in the boot heel.
Mm-hmm. And you have to look at that area, and this is the first thing I thought of when I read that story, is what spiritual thing is, what's the activity spiritually down there that may be the cause, or at least one of the causes, of this horrifying string of suicides?
Yeah. I mean, I know that suicide among teens is a serious problem in the United States, but in this particular county, the county coroner, a man named Jim Brimhall, who's been in the funeral business for 39 years, said he cannot recall the last suicide in that county by a young person before this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not something that they're used to down there in Pemiscot County.
And so, if I understood the article correctly, almost all of the graves are in the same cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in there, and it's all of these fresh graves.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, people in that town are looking at each other, as far as the young people, and they're thinking, who's next?
Who's next?
And the reason we connect this to the next story, I think you'll understand in a minute. You want to go ahead and tell them about the next story, honey?
This is from Minnesota, where an assistant professor of criminology at St. Cloud State has been piecing together a series of deaths across the Middle West that have taken place
Since
1997, right. More than 20 college-age men along I-94 from Minnesota to Ohio have drowned after disappearing from a bar or a party.
Mm-hmm.
La Crosse, Wisconsin seems to be one of the hot spots. There are three colleges in La Crosse, and which is on the Mississippi River. But in that area alone, 8 young men in the last 8 years have drowned in the Mississippi or other area rivers since after leaving a bar. And the this criminologist professor, criminology professor, his name is Douglas Gilbertson, is saying that this is just these are too many synchronicities here to be coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And police are saying,
nothing
here.
Kids do this all the time. Don't look.
The police officers in La Crosse were interviewed. The police in St. Cloud, Minnesota were interviewed, and they said, well, we just don't see enough here to consider this the work of a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really bizarre that you've got these the victims fit a general profile, white mm-hmm. or Asian men in their early 20s, generally around 5'8" and 165 pounds, good grades, and generally with an athletic build. But spread out from Minnesota to Ohio, 20 of them over the last 9 years.
You know, it took a while for the I-70 killer? Which interstate? What is it? There was an interstate. It turned out to be a man living north of Indianapolis who was doing the killings.
Oh, along the interstate between Indianapolis and St. Louis.
And Ohio.
In Ohio. I think I-70 is correct.
It took a while for the police to realize that those murders were connected.
Mm-hmm. According to this article, 22 victims who went to college within 50 miles of I-94 between Moorhead, Minnesota and East Lansing, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And again, fitting that general physical profile, roughly the same height, build, mm-hmm. general good looks, getting drunk at parties and then turning up dead in the river. And yet police are saying, no, this just appears to be coincidence. People get drunk and fall in rivers all the time.
You know, it just sounds really... No, I don't think this is a coincidence.
It makes me wonder if... Because apparently Douglas Gilbertson and his grad student just did the research from the internet newspaper archives and police reports. I wonder if they searched for other areas of the country, or if they were just looking along I-94.
I don't know. That's a really good question, and that's something that I can start doing some research on this week.
I'm going to try to get a hold of him to see if I can get him to talk about this on the air.
I wish you would. I think
because
that,
obviously we're a big college town here in Missouri, mm-hmm, in
exactly.
Columbia. We've got 4 colleges and universities mm-hmm. here. Gosh, we probably have a good 27,000 students in this town.
Mm-hmm.
So I will.
And we're not far from a river.
Yeah, the Missouri is just a little bit, runs just a little south and west of here of mm-hmm. Columbia, 5 or 10 minutes. So yeah, it's very bizarre. And so we're wondering if you have noticed anything like this or seen anything like this in your area, or if this is something that Professor Gilbertson has really picked up on, that somebody is traveling over the last 9 years, the length and breadth, well, not length and breadth, but I mean along that stretch of I-94. Mm-hmm. You know, from East Lansing, which is Michigan State University, and Moorhead, Minnesota, which, I don't know what college would be there. Not University of Minnesota, maybe Moorhead State?
No, Moorhead State's in, is there one in Minnesota, too?
No, it's somewhere else.
One in Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the wrong one.
Well, anyway, there are schools, and... if you do know of anything, please let us know. We're going to try to, as Derek said, try to chat with this guy. And Derek's going to mention to him the Caruthersville story and see if this gentleman can perhaps put his expertise to use.
Yeah. The reason we bring this up during this program is because we find this not only...
this isn't just idle curiosity.
No. It appears to be another one of those shadows that we see in the news that indicate the true spiritual battle that's going around us.
Mm-hmm.
So it is curious that we've got these deaths. Disturbing is more the correct term. But even more, what's curious is the police response saying, "Well, yeah, okay, so what?"
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they weren't quite that cavalier about it, but maybe they just don't have enough information, or these are departments that don't have the resources to investigate. But
that could well be, and it could be that. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard to say. I'd like to think that if something like that, if we lost several students from any of the universities around here, colleges around here,
yeah,
that, and maybe part of it is because it's over a stretch of time. It's over a 9-year period.
Yeah,
you're looking at, happening in such a concentrated time frame, right, that they link it together in their minds.
You're looking at 2 to 3 victims per year. Per year.
That's a long cooling off period. It unless is. He's going elsewhere. I assume it's a male because it's usually, you know, male on male or male on female.
That's right.
Not many female serial killers.
No. Other aspects to this case that Professor Gilbertson found, 94% of the drownings took place within 100 miles of I-94. 82% occurred during the first 2 weeks of the month. And 3/4 of the disappearances occurred when the moon was less than half full.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Now, if the drownings were random, you would think that there would be a lot more diversity in the characteristics of the victims. They wouldn't all be young men, white or Asian, about 5'8", you'd, with good grades. You think you would find some who were not quite not athletic or who had poor grades, or you'd find some African-Americans in there.
Right.
So it's really curious. And I wonder what you can infer from the time of the month that these things took place.
I don't know. So, well, anyway, we'll try to talk to him. Speaking of talking to him and talking to people on your daily radio show, I got to do that with you on Friday.
That was really fun. That was a lot of fun. We were short-staffed at the station that day. It was a company Christmas party. and I could have set up a, you know, like a best of show and just kind of automated the station and left it for the one poor guy at our top 40 station in the building who's got to be there because they've got the responsibility of being the primary EAS alert station. They always have to have somebody there. And usually on the weekends, there'll be one person there who's basically overseeing 5 stations. Weird. Well, I you know, the company Christmas party was, it was.
Well, we had no desire to go. It wasn't the people. It was just the location.
No,
it
not at all. I work with great people. But I saw it as an opportunity to run the controls myself instead of my producer, which
and
I need to know
did.
How to do. And so I asked Sharon to come in and share the conversation. And so we just talked about some fun stuff. Favorite Christmas cookies, favorite Christmas movies, Christmas. We played a Christmas song, sort of.
We could play that on our show one day next week. You never know.
That'd be great.
I know. Well, it was a whole lot of fun. And the people in Columbia are just wonderful people and had lots of callers. So that was great. It's not a podcast one. So no, you can't go on there and listen to it because we didn't have Justin there to take care of that.
I had enough going on just trying to make sure the right buttons were getting pushed and trying
to
record
it
at the same time.
You did a great job, honey.
Well, missed the top of the hour in the last hour.
But yeah, than, you know what? Justin is, he is a gem. And I think you appreciate it all the more now.
Yes, yes. And our morning guy in particular, who does his show with a lot more elements going on and having to run his own board. Yeah, that was a big challenge. So, but we look forward to having the opportunity to do that again. Just turning to something a little lighter, but something intellectually interesting. The Vatican has announced that archaeologists there have unearthed a sarcophagus believed to contain the body of the Apostle Paul.
You know, I published that story on Watcher Magazine this past week, and it was really, apparently they unearthed it a while back, and they haven't yet opened it. So how do they know what they've got?
Yeah, I don't know. And the sarcophagus, they say, dates back to about the year 390.
I know.
So
we're pretty sure
know?
It's Paul because it dates back to 390, huh?
Yeah, so if we put him in there 330 years after he was...
Yeah.
Possibly 333 years after he was
killed. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But this began, the investigation or excavation began in 2002. Mm-hmm. So they've been working on this for 4 years. It will be interesting to see what they say about this. I just thought that was kind of kind of
cool. It is interesting. And speaking of the Vatican, we had the Pope who went to Turkey, and he got out of there alive. And I have to say, praise God for it. I'm not a big fan of the Pope, but you know, I pray for him. I pray for his safety, and I pray for his salvation. And I would have been very sad had he been assassinated in Turkey.
Yeah, it was interesting that the one of the biggest causes of the protests there appeared to be his opposition to Turkey's admittance into the EU.
Mm-hmm.
But when he
when he got there, he seemed to do a 180.
Yeah, and said, okay, I've changed my mind. Turkey should be in the EU. And then everybody thought, hey, this is great. And then when he went into the mosque and then he prayed toward Mecca.
He'd been anti-Muslim up until that point, and they knew it. And that's one of the reasons they were so cheesed at him. And he gets there, not only can Turkey come in the EU, I'm going to go into a mosque and pray. I'll even face Mecca.
Yeah, yeah. What's really interesting is the news that Henry Kissinger is going to be a new political advisor for the Vatican to the Pope.
Oh, man. Oh, Saint Henry.
That's really unusual. I mean, you know, Henry is a shrewd guy. There's no question. But I just wonder why the pontiff believes he needs the advice of Henry Kissinger on matters political.
I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. There are a lot of things about former Cardinal Ratzinger that I think have huge question marks around them.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't feel any worse about the Pope with his hands in politics and turning to Henry Kissinger than I do about guys like John Hagee or Rick Warren getting involved in politics. Let's focus on dealing with matters spiritual and remember that Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world, and deal with salvation issues rather than on A, political issues, and B, church growth issues. So it will be really interesting to see how that church growth movement develops in 2007. The visit by Barack Obama, to bring this back to Senator Obama, to Saddleback Church, Rick Warren's home church, was really an interesting event week before last. Here he opened his church to a senator who is not only pro-abortion, but pro-partial birth abortion, addressing a group of evangelical Christians.
Well, he's in the CFR.
He is, meaning Rick Warren.
Yes.
So, again, we're dealing with matters temporal rather than matters spiritual.
You know, there's a wonderful article that I posted to WatcherMagazine.com by a pastor from Illinois, from not too far from here, Ray Bauman. It's titled Church Growth Hormone, a Biblically Banned Substance. He wrote that for the Worldview Weekend website. And in fact, I encourage Derek to give him a call. I would love to talk to him on our show if he would come on, because he sees it. He was part of that.
Yes, the church growth movement.
Purpose-driven church for a while. Now he's not driven mad by that anymore, and he's seen the light.
Yep. And it seems the happier for it. Smaller church, but focused on saving souls.
Exactly. He's not focused on making sure he's got more and more people coming through the door.
Right.
He's focused on the hearts of the people who are there.
Right. The size of the church is more a validation of the minister than it is of what's being ministered.
Exactly. Well, you and I have talked about this before. Jesus had huge crowds, 10,000, 5,000, you know, and those were just the men at any point. So he probably had, you know, as many as maybe 50,000. Who knows? Well, once it came down to it, they were just there for the food.
They wanted to make him king because he can heal us and he can feed us.
Yep.
And when Jesus said, no, that's not what I'm about, then they wanted to, then they were
they wanted
like,
out
okay,
of there.
Give us Barabbas.
Uh-huh.
Mentioned earlier that we'd kind of been watching on the Sci-Fi Channel tonight. They're running the Mummy movies back to back.
I love those movies.
Yeah, it's they're really a hoot. Of course, not for Egyptologists. I'm sure Egyptologists
are
just cringe at the
I don't really
the
think
history.
That they're the real Imhotep. Imhotep. Sorry, just got a hold of me again. I can't help it. That he really was, you know, turned into this thing, and he's
going
to come back, and the biblical plagues will once again hit Egypt.
Nice. Yeah, and some, you know, statistical, just some, you know, little details like the character Benny holding up the Star of David and, you know, stopping Imhotep. Oh, wait, that's the language of the slaves. Excuse me, the real Imhotep lived way before there even was a Hebrew people, about 500, 700 years, anyway. But it prompted a bunch of research into Egypt and history and the history of the Hebrews and the Jews in Egypt, which is just a really fascinating area of study. Especially, again, I keep coming back to that period what they call the second intermediate period in Egyptian history, mm-hmm. where this group of outsiders called the Hyksos, H-Y-K-S-O-S, invaded Egypt and took over and ruled the northern part of Egypt for about 75 years before they were thrown out again. And there were a couple of the pharaohs during that period who were named Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
What?
We're not saying it's the patriarch Jacob.
No.
We're saying that they were Semitic.
Right.
The
name Jacob.
From Shem.
Yeah. The name Jacob turns up in the city of Ebla, which is northern Syria, at about 2300 BC. So, which was, good 400 years before Abraham, probably. Mm-hmm. So it's a name that existed in and around Canaan, the Semitic, for a long, long time. What it does show is that the Hyksos were probably cousins of the Hebrews, or there may have been Hebrews among the Hyksos while they were there. But
it's like saying you're related to Jonathan Frakes. And because you are, you're like him. You can play Will Riker.
Yeah.
He is actually related to Jonathan Frakes. But it's a very sure tale.
Anyway, just some interesting stuff.
You'd be
stuff.
A good so Will Riker, though.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do I need with the beard or without?
Well, if you want to be evil, Will, it would be with the beard.
With the beard?
Yeah,
okay.
Sort of like evil Spock.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting back to seriously about the Hyksos, there's a wonderful conversation going on regarding that on the forum.
Yeah, the Peering into Darkness forum, which is peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And it's really a neat place because we've got some people who are really have done some reading on it. None of us profess to be scholars, but we've done some reading on it, and we've been exchanging ideas back and forth.
I feel like a lumpy potato compared to a lot of the people on that forum. There are some real brains on there.
We've been kicking around the notion that perhaps some of the other Egyptian pharaohs were in fact the patriarchs.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't subscribe to that theory, and I won't go into detail as to why, but I think there's some historic evidence that indicates why not. But there are some others who think that the evidence points to just a rewriting of history by the victors once they were kicked out, and that it was actually the patriarchs who ruled during that second intermediate period. And again, just really interesting stuff. And another theory that I ran across today, which I thought was really interesting, was that perhaps the Hyksos were the Edomites, those who descended from Jacob's brother Esau.
Uh-huh.
And who developed a very powerful kingdom in their own right prior to the rise of Egypt as a real power.
I think there may be something to that one.
That was a really interesting theory, and that one is something I want to do some more reading on. But I think a lot of scholars, when they look at the Bible and denounce the Bible or just dismiss the Bible as a source of historic information, are doing so just because they don't want to give credence to what is primarily a spiritual mm-hmm. book. It contains a lot of history, but it's more a record of the line of descent from Adam through Abraham to Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people groups that show up in the Bible insofar as how they affect the Hebrews and then the Jews. And I was thinking about that today, and we've done some research into our family histories, and I think about how much I know about your direct ancestors, my direct ancestors going back, 8, 9, 10, 12 generations. But the groups that we know a little bit about that sort of, branched off from the family tree at some point 100, 200 years ago,
mm-hmm.
there could be thousands, literally thousands of descendants from people who branched off from the family tree, say 200 years ago, and went off someplace that we don't know where. And there could be thousands of them out there. So when archaeologists and historians are saying, well, the Bible doesn't mention this, important political group over here, so obviously the Bible can't be trusted as a source. Like, well, again, the Bible is about documenting the line of descent mm-hmm. and dealing with that core group of people that comprised God's chosen people through the birth of the Savior and then through the initial dispersion of his message to the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. I've got a cousin who was named after me.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Sharon Kay. And even though she is my cousin, I hardly know her.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up in different parts of the world. She grew up primarily in Kentucky, and I grew up primarily in Indiana. And I think I've seen her maybe 5 times in my whole life. And because we have the same name, And because we are from the same family, 100, 200, 300 years down the road, if someone wanted to find my name and see, oh, well, she was involved in this Christian ministry and she wrote books, and this other person over here was also named Sharon Kay, well, maybe that's the same person. And these the things that my cousin does somehow would be ascribed to me, or vice versa. That you can't, just because the name is the same, assume mm-hmm. that it's the same family.
Right.
Or the same person. But you know,
which is what this fellow who's promoting the idea that this Jacob Pharaoh was actually Jacob the patriarch.
No, you can't do that. I wonder if the name Jacob went back further in Abraham's family. If that's where Isaac, you know, if he picked up the name Jacob from back in the family somewhere. Of course, Jacob means supplanter, so it could be that anyone named, you know, Jacob is being named that for a reason.
And interestingly, there was a scarab with the name Jacob inscribed on it, found in Canaan, in roughly the area that we know that the Jacob, the patriarch, lived, mm-hmm. and dated to about the same time, around 1900, 1800 BC. And we know that he had a pretty powerful retinue with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it may well be that he was not just one guy with his family, but he was really a powerful regional ruler in ancient Israel.
Well, also, and I think this is lost, and I got this recently from reading through Mike Heiser's book, Islam and Armageddon. He talks about the descendants of Abraham, and it reminded me as I read it that the Midianites mm-hmm. also descended from Abraham, and I think it's through Keturah, his third wife, I think is what Mike said. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong on that. That they tend to get forgotten,
mm-hmm.
and when Moses went to hide out there,
mm-hmm.
he found people who worshipped in a very similar fashion to the way the Israelites, the Hebrews, worshipped back where he grew up. And in fact, it was Jethro who worshipped at the Mount of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much history there in the Bible. In spite of what the historians and the archaeologists say, there has yet to be a discovery that repudiates or contradicts the biblical account. When you do the digging and really read into it, you'll find that it is oftentimes the other way around, that the new archaeological finds will confirm the biblical account, which is really pretty cool. And that's one of the things that I find really helpful, and it was one of the things that really cemented my faith when I started really digging into it. So anyway, just wanted to kind of toss that out there. And if you enjoy that sort of discussion and not just the hard, you know, archaeology, you know, the cold, dusty, archaeological, dry, you know, debates, but then how the spiritual aspect of it fits together.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that the Hebrews were set upon by the Amalekites and then all the other ites as soon as they left Egypt, that we get into the divine council discussions mm-hmm. and the spiritual war and how that affected history. You'll find all of that going on at the Peering into Darkness Forum.
That's right. That's such a fun place to hang out. Go over there, visit. You don't have to register if you don't want to. You can just go through and
read.
Just sort of read. You'd be there as a visitor, a guest. Mm-hmm. But if you want to register and do some posting, we'd love to have you there. It's peeringintodarkness.com/forum, the way Derek said. And, you know, if you're in the area and you want to bring your laptop over and sit down on a Sunday afternoon and chase down these stories with Derek, he's up to spending the entire afternoon doing that. And you know what? I can do it too.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
we're crazy people.
A fun afternoon for us. It's just following where our curiosity takes us. We spent a couple hours the other night watching a documentary on the Mughal dynasty of India.
I loved that documentary. I learned so much about that.
I was not aware.
I was still chasing down Taj Mahal stories today.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that the Taj Mahal was built as late as it was. I thought it was like 13th century or something.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, apparently it was just not long before the English decided they wanted to take over.
Well, I was reading today about how the Taj Mahal, and you and I talked about this because we've seen another documentary regarding this, but I wanted to learn more about it, how it represents the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taj itself, the big dome, represents the throne of God.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. One of the points they didn't make clear in that documentary was that the rulers of the Mughal dynasty were Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
But Muslim, very tolerant for what we know of the Muslim countries in the Middle East today. Their greatest ruler, Akbar, basically opened it up and said, you're free to worship as you please. And he abolished the tax that mm-hmm. was normally levied on Jews and Christians. And
that would be unheard of today.
In most Muslim nations today, it would. Yeah. So interesting, interesting. At the height of the mid 1600s, that was probably the most powerful empire in the world, mid India.
Mm-hmm. It was huge.
Yeah,
it was huge. And as we watched that, and how beautiful these palaces were, and just imagining what it would have been to live there, and how. Well, I think sophisticated the places were because they had plumbing and mm-hmm. and they had amazing ways of drawing water from below because one of the complexes was built very, very high, mm-hmm. far away from any natural water source. And yet it was brought up via this amazing bucket system on, mm-hmm. on these huge wheels, almost like you would see at a mill,
mm-hmm.
except the mill, the wheel is in contact with the stream itself. This had to go way down.
Yeah, yeah.
So bring up bucket after bucket. It was really, really neat. And I thought, oh, you know what? Europe, the United States, we just think we have the market cornered.
We're all that. And then we've always been all that. And mm-hmm. then all those parts of the country, world rather, India, the Middle East, the Far East, Africa, we're just all backwards.
Well, I tell you what, it's going to...
Latecomers.
It may just, well, latecomers, we're about to become... The late
yeah.
United States, if it keeps going this way. Just posted a story to Watcher Magazine that by the year 2020, China will be the world's leading manufacturer yeah. of automobiles.
And something to watch this coming week. Apparently, the president is sending a very unusual delegation to China to try to hold up the dollar for a little while longer. He's, the Treasury Secretary, the Chairman of the Fed, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary of Energy, and the U.S. Trade Representative all on their way to China this coming week.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to have to keep an eye on that.
Yes.
There is something up. Well, lots of things to talk about. We will be talking about those on a daily basis.
That's right.
Now, we're going to give it a try. Keep us in your prayers. We're going to try to do 30 minutes per day, Monday through Friday. We're going to mm-hmm. take Saturdays off, and then on Sundays you'll get your 60-minute PID.
That's right. If you have any comments for us, you can send them along to radio@peeringintodarkness.com or direct them to either one of us, Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com or Derek@peeringintodarkness.com.
And in the meanwhile, we want you to have a blessed week, a safe week. And if you know of anything going on in your area that we should know about, send us that note. And pretty soon, we're going to have it set up so you can even leave a voice message.
Right.
One that we can put on the show.
That's
so,
right.
Be writing that down. What's your speech going to be? Please don't yell at us.
Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye.
TID Radio.